Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. Talking about the fourth serial of the sixth season of Doctor Who, The Crotons, which consists of four completely existing episodes that aired from December 28th, 1968 to January 18th, 1969. Let's get a live one.
Joe Fax!
That's my favorite one.
That was like really like early morning drive time radio show. Joe Fax! And now, Timmy with the weather.
Oh, hi. The weather is going to be, it's kind of cold.
The weather guy is never on board for, like, awesome. Like, it's always like a bunch of people putting on voices like, yeah, hey, how you doing? How you? And then the weather guy is just kind of like, yeah, we got the weather.
For some reason, he's from Canada?
I don't know. I thought he sounded a little bit like Kermit the Frog, actually.
A little bit. And before I introduce who you clearly already know who that is, he's in every episode. I want to give a shout out to Matt Golden for getting us these episodes. Thanks, Matt Golden.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. Now I will introduce the man whose voice just graciously graced
our screwed that all up.
presence here. He's here. The guy's here. It's Chris.
Hi, I'm here.
Christopher, middle name Cherry.
I like Christopher Gibran Cherry.
I like that.
That's my favorite so far.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. How's the weather?
It's cold. It's kind of cold. I can never do Kermit on purpose. If I try to do Kermit, it sounds awful, but sometimes I'll say something like, that sounded kind of like Kermit, and then I can never get it back.
That's the saddest thing ever.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about the Muppets now.
And I'm going to try very hard not for hyperboles. I'm going to be very realistic. The Muppets are the greatest thing that has happened in Western civilization.
You did a great job. That was not at all hyperbolic.
The Crotons!
All right, before we start,
Chris has prepared something.
I've actually watched The Crotons a decent amount for a couple of reasons. One is that it's a second Doctor serial that is only four episodes and it completely exists. If I'm ever in like, I want to watch a second Doctor serial, but I don't want to like commit to six episodes. Here's The Crotons.
Didn't you watch The Mind Robber?
I usually watch The Mind Robber, but if it's been too recently since I've seen The Mind Robber, and even The Mind Robber is five episodes.
Yeah, but it's also, the episodes are shorter.
Yeah, this is very true. But so like, yeah, usually I'll watch The Mind Robber, but if I haven't watched The Mind Robber or it's been too recently, I'll watch The Crotons. But also, because the Crotons is the first serial written by Robert Holmes.
Sherlock's brother, right?
Yes, Sherlock. In 2014, Doctor Who magazine did a poll where they had their readers rank like the first 50 years of Doctor Who stories. Everything like from 63 to 2013, every televised story, they ranked it. And in the top 10, there's only two writers that have more than one story in the top 10. Stephen Moffat and Robert Holmes. Robert Holmes is the most important Doctor Who writer ever.
Not because of this serial, though.
Not because of this. No. This serial is like, on that list is like 203. If Robert Holmes is a classic Who's Stephen Moffat, this is definitely not The Empty Child.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
And it's weird because he had been trying to get this episode made since like, I think the first season of Doctor Who, if my looking it up facts are correct, or at least since the first Doctor. He pitched it during the first Doctor and it got rejected, and then he pitched it again when new people took over, and then they changed it drastically.
Maybe it's sort of in this is not his fault, which would make sense. Because again, like, he wrote more Doctor Who than I think anybody else.
Wow.
TARDIS Wikia has a list of things that were either he created for the show or debuted in episodes that he was in. I'm not going to read the entire list because it's going to be some stuff that you aren't familiar with yet. But he debuted or created the Autons, the Santarans, four companions, including Romana, and all the Third Doctor companions, including Sarah Jane Smith. He wrote the first episode with the Third Doctor. He wrote the first episode with the Master in it. He wrote the last episode with the Fifth Doctor, which is widely regarded by many to be the greatest Doctor Who story of all time. He also co-wrote the last episode of The Sixth Doctor, which is not. He wrote for every Doctor from 2 to 6. And the only reason that he didn't write for 7 was because he died in like 86, like in the middle of co-writing the end of the 6th Doctor. And it got taken over by some other people who are much worse. He was the script supervisor for the first half of the 4th Doctor era, which is also highly regarded as like the high point of the show in general. He also wrote the episode that codified basically everything about Gallifrey. He codified the name Gallifrey. The name Gallifrey appeared in a Robert Holmes episode. And he wrote this one episode that codified pretty much everything about the Time Lords, including the regeneration limit and the name and sort of character of Rassilon. Without Robert Holmes, this podcast would not be called The Watchathon of Rassilon.
Nice.
Normally, he's a very good writer. He's very funny. He's got like a great sense of humor. Like, he has certain things that he likes a lot. He likes crazed, maniacal rulers that are sort of in states of decomposition. And he loves like two-man comedy teams.
Who doesn't?
The Talents of Wang Chang has a comedy team that was so popular that they have their own spinoff on Big Finish. Yeah, this is me saying, just marking the fact that this is the first Robert Holmes episode. And even though, again, it's not great.
It's not bad.
I wanna read what the original premise was, because I actually think it's better than what we got. Because this was, okay, it was submitted for season 2 of Doctor Who with the first Doctor. This 4-part story idea involved the Doctor and his 3 companions arriving on an uninhabited planet to discover a spacecraft controlled by robots while its human occupants lie in suspended animation waiting for the additional crew members needed to once again operate their crashed ship. The Doctor and his companions are taken captive and trained up by the robots as the replacement crew members. However, only 3 additional crew members are required. The member of the Doctor's party that proves least useful is to be callously killed off by the human crew. This was Holmes's first story submission for the series. It was primarily rejected due to the robot's role being similar to that of the mechanoids in the chase from the previous season. And then he would later resubmit it and it becomes the Crotons. You can see all of those ideas, most of those ideas, in this serial, but done less interestingly.
Yeah, there's a lot about the execution of this serial that leaves something to be desired. Also, before we get into it anymore, we need to address the elephant in the room, which is that Croton sounds like crouton.
Yes!
It sounds like crouton, the best part of a salad.
What?
Yeah.
I don't like croutons. I don't like crunchy bread.
You said croutons.
Sorry. Fuck.
No, they're the best part of a salad.
I disagree.
Well, you're...
I don't like croutons.
Categorically.
Croutons. God damn it. I don't like croutons.
I don't like croutons either.
I don't like robots in my salad at all.
No.
I don't like crunchy bread. Why would you put crunchy bread in a salad?
To make the salad crunchy.
It's just leaves.
I like the leaves. I like the I like the lettuce and the tomatoes. I like all that stuff. I don't like the crunchy bread. It throws off the texture.
They're so wrong.
I'm not a big fan of bread in general, to be honest.
That's weird. You're weird.
I threw off your croutons.
He doesn't like...
I don't like toast.
Anything.
I don't like grilled cheese.
Crust.
Oh, you're weird. That's just... I don't want to be part of this podcast anymore. Anyway, but yeah, episode 1. Now that I've done my whole spiel.
Episode 1 of the croutons. Damn it! No, episode 1 of the croutons, which I have titled The Croutons Companions. Because it is. It's about the Croton's companions. They say it a lot. We basically just jump right into it.
Yeah, we don't start on Team TARDIS at all. We just start right on this other planet where there's some weird ceremony shit happening and some people are being chosen.
It's very Hunger Games.
It's also just like, especially since they're like students or whatever, it just feels like a graduation. Everyone's wearing wizard robes.
It feels like every single post-apocalyptic teen thing that's out right now. Like, every single one of them.
I hadn't thought about that. Like, everyone is ripping off the Crotons.
They pull some names out of a hat and say, you've been chosen by the Crotons to...
'Cause they're the best. Yeah. The smartest.
They are the companions to the Crotons.
One man, one woman, by the way.
Because that's how it works. Have you not seen those post-apocalyptic teenage movies?
Actually, I feel like normally it's 2 dudes so that there can be a love triangle.
Well, there's a guy and a girl from each district.
I mean, I've seen Hunger Games.
There's a guy vampire and a guy werewolf.
They're always from,
one of them's from the bad side of town. So you can have the good boy and the bad boy. Anyway, that doesn't happen in this.
There's just one guy, one girl.
And there's another guy, there is another guy, though.
Yeah, so there we are.
He's very unhappy that the one female character
were there exists on this entire planet.
Were there any other female Gons?
I don't remember.
I don't even remember seeing them like in the background.
This society, I don't know what's going on with it. In general, this is a thing about Doctor Who, and it's not totally their fault, just that it's a budget thing. But in particular, this feels like a society where there's 12 people. In particular, this society seems like so close to the edge of collapse. Part of it is the effect of the Crotons, like, and their specific knowledge that they give them. So that everyone has the intellectual and emotional maturity of a toddler. Everyone is just, like, screaming and, like, confused. It really feels like you're watching a society that is built by children, which it kind of makes sense, because it does sort of, like, they were sort of, like, bred to be this way, or sort of, like, educated to be this way. Which also, watching this, again, but, like, given the setup, the greatest thing that could have happened in this episode, and I would have been so happy, if, like, the doors opened and the reveal was that the Crotons were actually the Macra. Because, like, it's basically the same setup. They've got education things, they've got sort of everyone's kind of, like, arrested development. Everyone's kind of weird and, like, stilted.
Job, Lucille, George Michael.
Hey, that's the name of the show. And, like, I just wanted there to be one time where, like, it's like, obey the Macra. I mean, Crotons. We're Crotons. We're not Macra.
That's definitely how the Macra would have played that, too. They're terrible at being secretive.
So if you got the Crotons and the Macra together, you could just have a, like, a lobster salad, right?
Yeah, like a crab salad, yeah.
That sounds pretty good. So the one guy wants the one woman who, I don't remember any of their names, do you?
Smurfette.
He wants Smurfette to run away and not go through with whatever she has to do to be chosen. She gets a pretty cool robe, though.
Yeah, some pretty shiny robes.
It's a cape, I think.
She's like, I have to go through with it because that's what we do.
That's how this works.
So the TARDIS lands. It smells really bad. Jamie specifically says it smells like bad eggs, which
smells like sulfur.
Isn't that an episode of Buffy?
It is. I wish it wasn't. I've watched this serial again a few times. There's a moment where they're like walking through the, like, you know, just the rocks and whatever, and like where some weird music plays.
Was it music or was it the Doctor humming? That's what we could not figure out.
And the thing is that, like, every time I've watched this, and again, I've watched this a surprising amount, I feel like it happens and I'm like, what's going on? What just happened? And then it's over, and then nothing ever comes of it, and I forget, and so each time it's a surprise.
I think it was just the Doctor humming as they walked.
I couldn't tell. It didn't sound like music, right?
It sounded like... something like that. It was weird.
Yeah, like,
I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because we both commented on it when we were watching it. Like, what just happened?
I think it was the Doctor. I think it was the Doctor making that thing with that noise with his mouth.
I mean, I believe that. That's the thing he would do.
I need to talk about Zoe's outfit.
Okay.
It's really cute.
Yep, it is.
It's got like the little, it's like a little jacket.
It looks like it's got like a Batman, like kapow thing, but like stretched over the entire jacket.
There's only like one point where they were like climbing down rocks where I was like, ooh, careful. Skirt's not that long.
And she was previously complaining about the outfit she was wearing being
impractical.
Impractical in, what was that one?
Oh, it was the one where they all wore like curtains.
The Dominators. So she was complaining about it being impractical in the Dominators, but now she's wearing something pretty much as impractical.
She probably was just like, yeah, but it's cute though, so.
She wore that sparkly jumpsuit and never looked back. I think there was that, or also just like in the invasion, she's like wearing that feather boa.
And the sparkly jumpsuit, both.
Exactly. So she's just like, you know what?
I'm a model now.
Yes.
She is here for fashion.
They show up to the city, which is clearly not a model at all.
They show up in the middle of this, like, graduation ceremony or whatever, and they crash it terribly.
Wait, no, they don't go to that first. They go to
they find the machine first.
That first graduate who has to go through the machine because she's the chosen one. She steps out of the door.
No, he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because they save she.
Because we only have the one female character. Right. So the first graduate walks through the doors and, like, this thing opens up and these, like, pipes come through it. And then, like, smoke pours out of that. And then he just stops existing because of the smoke?
Yeah, it's like disintegration. It dissolves people.
He gets smoked.
And so they see that.
And they're like, that's
bad. Oh, shit.
Yeah, we gotta tell people about this. People don't know what's going on.
Then they sort of crash the ceremony. But it... It's very weird because it seems like there's multiple things happening at once, but nothing really gels. It's like two different plot lines are happening in the same room.
Right. It's so weird. And it's especially weird because Zoe is like narrating things. Like, I don't know if the idea is that, like, they're supposed to seem farther away than they are. Because, like, Zoe's just like, look what's happening. And it's, like, 5 feet away.
This is not a very big room. There's guards like, who are you, Team TARDIS, and what's going on? But meanwhile, there's this other thing going on about, like, the guy trying to stop the girl from going through the machine. Like, they don't acknowledge the doctor and all them at all, even though they're right there and that stuff is happening.
Yeah, it's so weird. I don't know, like, why it's supposed to be that way, but it's just... It's also, the doctor and the TARDIS team are doing a very terrible job of stopping this thing. Like, they saw someone murdered and they're not leading with it. Like, they're coming in like, no, you guys, there's a thing, like, hello, you know, that we saw, we wanted this thing, you know, like, hi, how you doing? I'm the doctor. We're friendly. The doctor is really big on assuming that being friendly will save them.
That's literally how he walks in. He's like, don't worry, I'm going to say we're friends. And he goes, we are friends! And then just immediately spears are on him.
And he's just like, we're very friendly, it's fine, how you doing? Like, yeah, okay, it's just, there's this thing. We were outside, yada, yada, yada. Everyone, you were outside in the Badland, the Wasteland or whatever. Like, no, it's fine, they're having this whole thing. There's been a murder. They should just be like, hey, guys, someone's dead out there. That's how you do it. Don't worry, though, we're friends.
At least he's not like the first doctor and he's like, dead guy, I'm going to pretend to be him. Or, I mean, the second doctor's done that, too.
The second doctor's done it.
his first serial.
Exactly. I was thinking about that a lot. I was wondering, like, how many Doctor Who serials start with someone witnessing a murder?
It's worse than a procedural. Oh, another example of it, like, feeling disconnected is, they're, like, all, like, distrustworthy of Team TARDIS. And I don't remember why, but Jamie starts a fight. He's ready to fight. And, like, the other people don't, like, acknowledge that there's a fight happening at all. Like, Jamie is, like, they're facing each other in a circle. And, like, one of them's like, hey, do you want a weapon?
He offers
and
Jamie's him a
like,
weapon.
No.
And Jamie's like, I don't need that. I'm gonna take this guy down with my hands.
Jamie is as eager to, like, start, like, a fight. And like, but like a full on like gladiatorial duel as Ian was a long time ago. He's like, oh yeah, of course. It's like, this makes sense to me. All this stuff is weird, but this guy has challenged me to a duel. I understand that.
I understand all this weird future shit. I understand fists. Ian is like, I can take you down with just my thumb and I won't even fucking move. Jamie is like, oh, your face is gonna be destroyed.
He wins, too.
He does.
Because, again, all these people are basically children.
And it's then after that point that they're like, oh, by the way, one of your dude guys here got smoked. And they're like, what? You lie.
No, he's with the Crotons.
Yeah.
He's in heaven now.
I kind of wanted this story to be, because with the Crotons just sounds like a euphemism. I want a Doctor Who story where there's a world where it's just like a euphemism that got out of hand. The TARDIS crew just lands on a planet and they see like a murder. And they're like, hey, this person's dead. They're like, no, they're not dead. They went to the farm upstate.
Oh, you should do it with those cat creatures. What are they called? I don't know.
The cat people.
Yeah, them.
Do they have a race name or are they just the cat people?
There's a couple cat people. There's some other cat people in Classic Who, too.
Classic Who, too? There's another one?
Yes, there's another one. That's just Big Finish, really.
Big Finish, Classic Who too.
Which we've slowly been getting into.
Big Finish?
Mm-hmm.
We've only listened to the... We haven't listened to any since the last time we said we have.
Yeah, but like...
She said slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah, very slowly. We have them.
Christmas is coming. You guys need to listen to the Chimes of Midnight. Everyone needs to listen to the Chimes of Midnight.
All right.
We got some from a friend. The friend is in this podcast. I'm not going to say who.
Is it me?
No.
Oh.
It's Christopher, middle name Cherry.
You just said you weren't going to say it.
I lied.
Ugh.
It's so untrustworthy.
So they're like, there's another person in there with the Crotons right now. And they're like, well, we got to go save her. So they leave. And so does Angry Guy. Who...
We did not bother learning anybody's name this episode.
No, there's Angry Guy, Smurfette. There's Angry Guy's dad. There's Scientist. And there's Forehead.
Yes, there is.
I believe Forehead's name is Ehrlich, but...
That's the only name I remember.
So they go out to save the girl, and they're like, That's where the guns go out. Let's shove some rocks in there.
That'll work.
That'll work. It does. But when the woman, the woman comes out, the Smurfette, she passes out. And the doctor gets her, but the guns still do come out, and they completely ruin the doctor's umbrella.
Which the doctor had an umbrella.
He was very upset about it.
He said, "My favorite umbrella," implying that he has more than one, and this one is his favorite. The girl passes out with her eyes open still, and is unnervingly good at not blinking or moving her eyes.
She's like really good at it.
Like the doctor's like waving his hand in front of, like poking at like underneath of her eyes. Her eyes are open and not moving. I was like, shit, she's for real dead.
Like, did they make a fake her or something? Cause she is really good at not moving at all. And she was like very stiff too. It wasn't like she was like limp or anything. She was very stiff as well. So it was like, it was unsettling.
I just definitely creeped out by it. I mean, like, the doctor was like checking to see if she was like passed out, had like his fingers all up in her eyeballs, and nothing. It freaked me out.
The only way that I know that she isn't a prop is that these people can't make props that good.
Oh, speaking of props not being made well, there's something that happens later in this serial that I love and I can't wait till
we talk
about it.
The crotons are great so long as you frame them correctly. We'll just say that for now.
So they take her back to the city. I think they take her to the angry guy's dad. I think he's the leader, too.
Yes.
He's the leader.
You can tell because his costume is cooler than everybody else's.
Very slightly, yeah. He's like, but the crotons are our friends. What?
Why would they do that?
And then the doctor hypnotizes Vanna?
Sure. One of those.
Yeah, Vanavana.
Vanavana. She turns the letters. And I don't... What did he do? Why did he hypnotize her? He's actually trying to get her to go to sleep. Because he's like, stop staring at me. It's weird.
It's creepy. Close your eyes. I think literally that's what he was trying to get her to do. Her eyes, like, she doesn't close her eyes until he's done hypnotizing her.
And he's like, finally, it's creeping me out.
They're just trying to see if she's going to be okay. Because in the machine, something happened to her.
And then they're like trying to figure out what's going on. They get a history lesson on the crotons. And they're like, but the guy's also like, why are the crotons killing like our best students? That doesn't make sense.
Like, they're the ones who taught us.
And they also say that silver men caused poison rain. And I was like, silver men? God, it's not the Cybermen again, is it?
We can't do it again.
They keep doing Cybermen stories, but it's not. It's the crotons.
Yeah, it's just the crotons.
Just some croutons.
Yep, just a couple.
We cut from that to this computer custodian who's getting attacked by a group of people.
Again, this society is collapsing so fast. Like, everything is just, like, happening.
I will say, this is, like, the most fast-paced serial we've had in a long time.
Exactly. In a way that's, like, kind of ridiculous, because it's, like, again, like, this ceremony happened, like, 20 minutes ago. And in the middle of it, like, people were already, like, shouting, like, no, this is a thing that's happening. Again, like, half an hour passes, and they've, like, banded together and, like, alliances are forming, you know?
Yeah, this is, like, episode 3 stuff. I don't know if it's because we've had so many longer serials for such a long time.
That this feels short.
Even though it's 4 episodes. Definitely feels very quick.
But they want to attack the learning machines. The machines that teach them shit. And they figure if they attack the machines, that'll get the crotons to come out. Because the crotons never leave the machine. They just sort of live. They hang out there. They live there.
And so they start smashing the machines, right?
Yeah.
And then the machine says X and beeps. Then they start saying, stop smashing the thing.
The crotons do. And they're like, holy shit, they've never spoken to us before.
And the leader has been warned that this is happening, so they all run to go check on it. And they take a shortcut to the wasteland, because the wasteland is totally fine to go into now.
I'm not clear on the geography of any of this at all.
No, it's like there's 3 rooms, and then a 4th room underneath that seems to be a bigger set than any of the other sets.
Yeah, up top. But again, they're like, we'll take a shortcut from the wasteland. And it's like, isn't everything outside the wasteland? Isn't it just like, there's no sense of place or anything.
Also, why is there a door to the wasteland?
That's from the machine, though, isn't it?
No, I mean the entrance that they came into.
Oh.
I can tell, like, the time about going in the machine, they live kind of in the machine or next to the machine. Like, I don't know where anything is in relation to anything else.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. But the leader and the doctor come in and say, hey, stop smashing the machines. That's not going to work. And then the beeping thing studies the doctor and like turns his face into dots. And then things get sexy. A glory hole opens. A glory hole opens on the wall, and a giant hentai-esque robotic penis slithers out of the glory hole.
It's definitely like the top 20 most phallic Doctor Who props.
And the Doctor is like shrinking away from it and moaning weirdly.
It's in like the foreground and the Doctor's in the background like writhing. It's bad.
And then you don't know what's going to happen, and that's boom, that's the cliffhanger. And you're like, did it come? We don't know.
Stop.
God.
You'll have to tune in next week to find out if it finished.
Stop.
And that's the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I have titled The Croton's Companions 2. The Doctor is the companion.
Jesus Christ.
That's a little Smokey and the Bandits. Smokey and the Bandits.
Bandits?
Bandit. There's only one.
Smokey and the Bandits. I was about to question whether or not there were more Smokey and the Bandits, but then thought about whether or not that was a valuable use of our time.
Seven Smokey and the Bandit movies.
Anyway.
The Doctor covers his face and it goes away because it works on facial recognition.
Yeah, it was looking for his face.
So the penis only goes for faces.
Guys, it really is incredibly phallic.
And the penis is like, what do I do? What do I do? And then finds another guy and just smokes this other guy.
Because it had to kill somebody.
It had to come on something.
Literally, that was the sort of thing. The Doctor's like, it was looking for my face, so I covered my face, and so it didn't know what to do. But it was programmed to kill somebody, so it just killed that person and then it left, because it couldn't leave without killing somebody, because otherwise it would feel like an idiot for coming out like this.
And it does the same thing as the other things, which it just shoots out smoke and it disintegrates you. I've heard of smoking cock before, but okay.
Get out.
This is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Leave and never come back.
Yeah, you're gonna have to pull out of that.
God damn it.
Episode 2.
I hate both of you.
And then the machines tell them to leave the hall, so they do.
Kick everybody out.
Are they called the Gons?
Yeah.
The Gons, yeah.
They're so far gone. The Gons have a tremendous gap in their knowledge, which may be significant. Because if they can figure out what they don't know, then they'll be like, why do they not know that? Maybe that's important. So the Doctor and Zoe are going to go to the learning hall to check it out.
Jamie and Zoe have a great conversation. Jamie tells Zoe, don't let him do anything rash. Because he's like that. But you know what he's like. And she's like, yeah, don't worry, I know. They go. She immediately lets him do something rash before doing something even more rash herself.
That is true. I didn't think about that because I did really like that line, because I was like, I like when the Doctor's companions are like, oh my god, will you please just keep him in check? Like, you know, somebody needs to babysit him.
He's immediately like, hey, there's a hole in the ground. I'm gonna look in that. And she's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm gonna go fuck around with this thing.
I'm gonna put it in my face. That should be fine. I see no negative consequences of that.
She hooks herself up to the learning machine.
She learns the shit out of some stuff.
And it makes her feel very pleased about this.
She's like, they're happy with me.
Wendy Padbury has the greatest, like, happy, excited face.
This is true!
Like, whenever, like, she sees something, like, magical, her face lights up, and, like, I feel the way that she feels. And so, but she does amazingly because she's Zoe.
Because she's Zoe, super genius.
Exactly. So they immediately pick her.
Like, send right. that one into the machine. She's the best.
Which leads to what is the best scene in this whole thing? The reason why this serial is worth watching.
Absolutely. The Doctor in a panic is like, well, shit, I can't let you go into that machine alone. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the learning machine so that it'll take me. Because obviously it'll take me because I'm the smartest and the best. And he fails miserably for like the first couple of minutes.
It's always like, you have to press this button. He's like, I don't know. She's like, that button. I got it. And then he just sits there and she's like, press the button. Oh, right. And I think she like has to press the button for him.
But and at the end, he's like, well, there, I did it. It's like, I did it now. I got a better score than you did. She's like, you answered more questions. They get really kind of into it. She's like, at one point, she's like, this isn't a competition. But it is. I love them. They have this great dynamic of, because they're both like super smart. I saw a post on Tumblr the other day. I replied. It was just like, Zoe's like that friend that you have, like, that you have a lot in common with. And so you can talk about all your stuff forever. And then Jamie's like that friend that you don't have anything in common with, but they'll listen to anything that you say. You're just friends, so you're on with it.
Which friend are we? Go.
You're both. You're a Zoe and a Zelda.
The Doctor manages to get a high score on the test.
To make the bell go ding, because the bell goes ding, and that means you're chosen.
All right.
Yeah, because there's a ding and then there's a message and it's like, the Crotons have chosen you.
Get your ass inside this machine.
There's two things that the Doctor says in this. One of them becomes like a famous quote for him and one of them doesn't. And I'm sad that not both of them are. Because at one point during the scene, like, I think when she gets chosen, like, a sound goes off and the Doctor says, quote, "Great jumping gobstoppers, what was that?"
Yeah, that was the ding I was talking about, yeah.
He says that, and it was just amazing. And I was like, why don't we say that all the time? Why is that? Why are there not, like, GIF sets of two on Tumblr with just, like, "great jumping gobstoppers"?
We can make that happen. We have the technology.
The other one has something to do with maids, right?
I thought you were talking about when he says, "my giddy aunt."
My giddy aunt, yeah.
Oh, my giddy aunt. People really associate that phrase with the Second Doctor. And it's a good phrase. Oh, my giddy aunt. But for some reason, "great jumping gobstoppers" didn't catch on.
It's harder to say. It doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. It's not like "great Muppety Odin." So yeah, they've both been chosen. They are the companions now.
Of the Crotons.
Of the Crotons.
Like the title.
And they go inside, and the door and as the door's closing, Jamie shows up, because Vanna woke up, and he's come to tell them. And then he sees them, as the doors are shutting, he sees Zoe and the Doctor going in. He's like, why? I leave them alone for 2 seconds, and they're going into the...
I specifically told them not to do anything rash.
He's like, I'm going to break in. I'm going to try to get in. So inside the machine, there's just two chairs. That's it. They're empty.
Inside the machine is a dentist's office.
Instead of like going around and like what's trying to figure out what this place is, they're like, there's two chairs. We should sit. So they sit. If there's chairs, I'm going to sit. And then the Doctor gives Zoe a chain because he's like, there's probably going to be a force field and this will keep us linked. I don't know what the purpose of the chain was exactly.
It doesn't end up mattering. It's just a lot of techno babble to make him sound smart.
I think it's supposed to, like, lessen the effect of the force field, maybe?
Sometimes, like, there's a bit of, like, technobabble or business in a scene, and you're like, what's going on? And then I'm pretty sure the writer was writing it, and then, like, someone else came up to him and said, there's a plot hole, why did this happen? And I was like, ah, fuck, I didn't think of that. Well, you need to explain that. Like, no, it's fine, no one cares. No, it doesn't make sense. Explain it. Well, here, he says this, there, okay, it's fine now. But no one cares, and it's just, like, this weird little thing that, like, everyone just ignores because it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah, a big light comes down on them. They're paralyzed. They're spinny things. It's very visual.
And you just did an excellent job of describing in a medium with no visuals.
There's smoking chains. There's weird camera angles. Plenty of GIF material or GIF material.
They get smart juice sucked out of them, basically.
And then there's something about, I don't know, it started to get confusing here and I couldn't quite follow it. They operated a thermal switch? That's my note. Because I was like, I don't know what's happening.
No, like, their brain power was used to operate a thermal switch. Because the Crotons run on brain power.
Which seems right. Incredibly inefficient.
Especially when they've given the Crotons solar-powered devices, or taught them how to make solar-powered devices. Which was mentioned earlier when the Doctor was examining Vanna. So why can't they just use solar energy?
Don't know. They're not very smart, actually.
And, like, it's supposed to be that, like, mental power, I guess, would be, like, there's more of it. But also, like, you basically go through, like, a whole person and that's it. You get rid of them.
Presumably, where they're from, they have smarter people. The idea is that they've been having to, like, they're stuck because they've been working with these Gons. These people who are not hybrids.
These Crotons aren't very smart, though, so...
I have a note later, because again, the Crotons classify Zoe and the Doctor as hybrids.
Jamie's a low brain, right?
Not yeah. Jamie.
Poor Jamie gets shit on by everybody in this serial.
It's a continuation. It's been happening to him.
They just look at him and they're like, he's not a high brain. And like in the next episode, they're like, he is of no value. And I'm like, poor Jamie. I have a note later on that just says, I feel like the mark of a true high brain is not using the phrase high brain. So clearly the Crotons are not high brains.
Right. They just need them. And we're about to get to something that's, I feel, very, very doctory. So they've done this thing and a wall goes away and there's just this big tank full of boiling liquid. So what does the Doctor do? Tastes it. That's what he do. And he puts some in a bottle as well. What happened? Did something come out of the water? Or was that just the Crotons showing up?
I think it was the Crotons showing up. I'm not 100% sure. At first I thought it was like, Is a new Croton being born?
Right. I was like, did they just birth a robot?
But I don't think so. Because there don't seem to be more than like two or three Crotons. And the number never changes. So I don't think that's...
And then it's sort of shown later that that boiling liquid sort of powers.
Yeah. So I think it was just them like testing it. Also, they haven't revealed the Crotons yet. So it's just like it's supposed to be a tease of how they look.
Right. But mostly it just comes off as kind of confusing.
You do see their hands, though, right? Their little clamp hands. Their teeny tiny clamp hands.
They can, like, accordion in and out of their body.
The direction on this serial is not great. It's a lot of it's very confusingly shot. There's a lot of headspace in places. It's just, like, the framing is bad. Yeah, it doesn't look great.
But an important episode, nonetheless.
It's Doctor Who. The worst episodes still have something in them worth watching.
Again, it's worth it for that scene of the learning thing.
The penis?
Yeah, and the penis.
No, the Doctor and Zoe can't exit because the door button is turned off.
They shove a rock in it.
That's how
you fix things.
It's worked so far. Why wouldn't it work now?
But then they're like, oh, poison gas. Let's duck to the side and run really quick.
And they do.
And they do.
It's fine. They're less dead than you'd expect.
And then they're like, what is that? Is it a gond? I don't know. It says the Crotons. And they're like, well, let's get that other one that's trying to get inside.
He's probably a hybrid.
Yeah. The Crotons play a game of, is it a gond? That's what they do when they're bored. They're like, is it a gond?
Is it not? Let's find out.
Is it not a gond? It has two arms. It might be a gond. There's a Croton stand-up comic who has a whole routine that's just, you might be a gond if. If you're very good at, like, physics but very bad at chemistry, you might be a gond. Because we trained you to be that way through oppression.
Oh, what's their opening act like?
Racism.
So, but they're like, well, we don't know if this is a gond or not. Let's take Jamie and then we'll ask him. We'll test him out. So Jamie goes in. The one guy's like, can you do that? Are you going to be fine? He's like, I got a big stick. I'll be all right.
I'm fine.
I've got this. He walks in. They immediately get rid of the big stick. The big stick is useless. This is not the first time Jamie has placed a lot of hopes in a big stick that are quickly dashed.
I like that it's the levels of how worried he is about something. Like, you, not worried, don't need a weapon. You, moderately worried, I'll take a larger stick.
But then they do the paralyzing thing to Jamie.
He doesn't have a chain, though, so...
And he's not a high-brained. He's a primitive. This will kill it. They don't even call him a him, they call him an it. And they said, it will kill it. And then Jamie passes out, and Jamie's dead. End of episode two!
That's the end!
Jamie died.
And then we never see him again.
We never see him again.
So sad.
It's not like a great write-off for a beloved character. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Like, they don't even mention him in the next episode.
At all. Let's see if we can talk about the next episode without mentioning Jamie.
We can't, you guys, because he doesn't for real die. He's okay.
He just, like, sort of sits up, and they're like, oh, I guess it didn't kill it. Whatever.
Yeah, people are just, again, they're just mean to him.
And we're now into episode three, which I call Slings and Fireballs, which gets mentioned more than once. The phrase, Slings and Fireballs.
But we never see
We never see a fireball.
All talk, no fire.
That's actually something about this serial, is it's a lot of talk, no action, especially from the Crotons.
I was going to say, we just sort of blew a bunch of shit up. We had people hanging off the helicopter ladders. I think they were like, calm down, listen.
But the Crotons, I feel like, are really good design. Like, they look cool.
Yeah.
I like them. And like, their voices are all right.
I like when their heads spin. Yeah. Yes, that's my favorite.
I like how they have giant ring pops on their heads.
Yeah, and they spin, and it's cool. And their voice is understandable.
You know what they're saying when they talk.
But that's all they do is they just talk. That's it. They don't do anything.
Yeah, and they don't have, like, a personality.
Except that they talk like this. I think their personality is that they talk more than they do things, though. Maybe that's the point.
I don't know. I couldn't quite tell what it is. They just had a lot of other Doctor Who monsters have, like, thing about them. The Daleks are kind of crazy and, like... omnicidal. The Santarans like war. The Cybermen are boring. They all have their thing.
Well, I think what they were trying to go for is, like, they sort of put all this importance on intelligence and, you know, all that, and they just talk themselves up and just talk and talk and just sort of ignore anything else that's happening to the point that they get their asses handed to them because they're too busy talking about themselves. So I get that a little bit, but it's not.
It could be. This serial is very anti-talk in general. Okay, so the Doctor and Zoe get out, and they're like, well, we're going to go to the TARDIS because we want to check this stuff out. And Zoe's like, what about Jamie? And the Doctor's like, what about Jamie? He's fine.
Jamie is not fine.
He's fine. He's hanging out with Smurfette. He's cool. I don't know why you're even bringing this up. It's almost as if you're setting up an ironic cut.
That happens multiple times in this episode, too. Like, there's a bit where Zoe's like, I feel like we're being watched. Cut to they're being watched. Even though, like, she didn't really have any reason to say that other than to do that cut. But the Crotons are also sort of questioning Jamie about the Doctor and Zoe and what's going on with them. And Jamie just literally has no idea because he's low brain.
He has no value. They say that to his face.
Aww.
Jamie equals zero. And then, okay, so we took a break between episodes 2 and 3. We watched 1 and 2 one night and 3 and 4 the other night. And then I don't remember this group of people that just shows up, but it seemed like they were very important. I don't remember if they were, like, this council of people, including Forehead Ehrlich.
They were there the whole time. Like, Forehead is in the first episode.
Is
yeah,
he?
They just, it's not very established that they're, like, a council of people.
That opening scene is such a mess that you don't get world building. He's this guy who's the head of the council. He's got this other guy, Forehead, who's trying to be the head of the council. But, like, it's not set up. It's not set up, really. But he's there, but no one really...
I feel like it's not until this episode that it's like, and now this makes sense! These random people are now more important. But it almost feels like it's coming out of nowhere, especially since we took a break, because I just sort of forgot about them.
The first episode's a mess, and that whole scene is a mess. And then the second one's a lot of, like, hanging out in the machine, dealing with other kinds of machines. It's very machine-heavy. This one is the first time that we're really dealing with the politics again.
Forehead and this group of people are going to this scientist to ask him for help to take out the Crotons. And he's like, nah. And they're like, don't you want to be free? And he's like, free? Yes. Dead? No. But then they keep talking to him a little bit. And they're like, he's like, all right, I might be able to develop a weapon on the limited amount of knowledge that the Crotons will let me have. They won't let me have all the information, you guys. But I could probably get it to you in like a week, maybe. And Forehead is like, not fast enough! He's like, I don't know what you want me to do, man. I'm not like...
We only just found out about the Crotons like an hour ago. We thought they were fine. We thought they were fine, and now they're clearly evil, and everyone's just like, oh, man, what's going on? This whole episode is like November 9th. Everyone's just really confused, like, what just happened? Yeah, but, and then, like, the Doctor and Zoe go to the TARDIS.
Yeah, this is the scene that I wanted to talk about. So that it cuts back to the Crotons interviewing Jamie or whatever. The Crotons are like, we're sending another Croton out to, you know, investigate your friends. And it pans over to the TV screen, and you see the Croton sort of, like, going down the ramp out of that door that everybody's been going out of with the poison gas and all that. But they hold on that shot, which they've never shown the bottom half of the Crotons. If you pay attention, you can see why. Because it's clearly just a skirt with some dude's leg shuffling underneath it. It's really hilarious. You can tell it's just some guy trying to wobble with this giant robot costume on. Fantastic. I laughed so hard. I had to show it again to Tony because Tony didn't even notice it. Because it happened so quickly. And it's literally the only time you see the bottom half of the Crotons. Did you notice it, Chris?
I did not notice it. Again, I've seen this episode, this serial, too many times.
It's fantastic. You should rewatch episode 3 and see that shot, because it's great. Because if you'll notice, that whenever they show the Croton after this, the one that's outside, it's always the Croton's POV, because they can't show it walking.
But yeah, like, and Zoe and the Doctor. Remember Zamie? You guys talked about Zamie, right?
I think so.
I'm pretty sure I pitched Zamie as a title once, so you guys mentioned it in an episode.
Joey makes more sense.
Yeah, Joey makes more sense. Someone must have said Zamie accidentally. And there's a bit in this next scene, I think, where the Doctor and Zoe are discussing how the Crotons work. And, like, they're figuring out, oh, they run on brain power. And the Doctor's like, oh, man, like, they were just waiting for us. And I was trying to figure out watching it, is there anything sort of Robert Holmes about this? And, like, what is in this first episode that might be going on? And I think what it might be is that the Doctor is so smug in this serial. More smug than normal. And he's already kind of a smug character. He's very smug about the fact he's like, oh man, we're real smart. They have no idea. They have no idea what they're doing when they're sucking our brains out. Right, Zoe? We're super smart. And then later in this next scene with the Hads, like, once the TARDIS comes back, he's like, see, I got this. I'm smart.
Yeah, he examines the water that he stole. Also, there's a scene where the leader's son, I think, is, like, really wanting to fight the Krotons. And he's like, I think Ehrlich's putting this thing together. We should do this. And the leader's like, no, it's not going to work. His slings and fireballs method is bad. Well, like, what would you prefer to do? And he, like, he says this, like, weirdly worded, complicated sentence. He fumbles it a little bit, and I'm just like, surprise attack. The words you're looking for are surprise attack. But he says it in, like, the most overly convoluted way possible.
It's like, we will be aggressive towards them without them being aware that we are going to do it beforehand.
It's kind of like in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies when they didn't want to say with great power comes great responsibility. So there's like a scene of like, if you're strong and you have abilities, you got to use those abilities for good. Can't use them for yourself. Like, they just, like, didn't want to say it.
So, yeah, he's going to do a surprise attack, which I think the doctor sort of clued him in on. But the doctor doesn't like this idea either, which we'll get to later. But Krotons are monologuing. This is the first time this happens. They're just talking and talking and talking and talking and talking, which gives Jamie the opportunity to just try to steal their shit.
Not only are they just talking, but Jamie's like, so if I wanted to kill one of you guys, how would I do it? The Krotons are like, oh, you know, we can't really be killed, but we can, like, be disintegrated, probably.
They don't give a shit about him because he's not a high brain. So he's like, yeah, I'm going to steal your shit. He escapes by putting the rock in the thing like they do, like the doctor and Zoe do. I don't know how he got the idea because, like, he just sees a rock on the floor and he's like, well, like, this is a triangle and that's a circle. So this goes here.
I think maybe he's just like, well, when we wanted to stop the gas, we put a rock inside a thing. And that's shaped the same way. Yeah. This'll work.
It takes him forever to escape, too. Like, he could have just walked out at any time.
No one's paying attention to him.
Before he escapes, like, there's a lot of shit that happens. Like, the doctor's getting sulfur.
Oh, they talk about that. There's a great line where Zoe and the doctor are talking about sulfur. And he goes, so of course, it's like sulfur solution. Like, Zoe says, of course, the worst smell in the world. Like, it's an objective fact. Like, she took a class on smells. And they're like, okay, so today in class, we're gonna rank all the smells. We've done science on this. This is the worst smell in the world.
It's also, she's like, oh, right, the smelliest thing in the world. I know your plan now. We will defeat them with smelly things. Which is not the plan, but, like, that's the, like, impression I got from that scene. I was like, they're gonna stink them out? What's gonna happen here?
I think she's just saying, like, oh, that's... because they've been talking about how much it stinks. And so she's like, oh, that's why it stinks. Because of that class I took where they explained that this is the worst smell in the world. She just says it with a tone of objectiveness. That's delightful.
That's the scene where she's like, I feel like we're being watched. And then they are. And, like, Jamie is also watching the screen and is, like, whispering to Zoe for no goddamn reason. Like, just one, you're whispering. Two, she wouldn't hear you if you were yelling.
Jamie's just one of those people that talks at the screen when they watch movies.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's the worst?
Oh, it's up there.
I mean, I do it.
Do you do it a lot?
No, but I do it sometimes.
Aren't you guys married?
I don't remember you doing it. I talk, but I make jokes. That's what I do.
That's the worst.
What if it's a bad movie?
What if it's a bad joke?
You know what? You do talk during stuff. Because I'll be like, I have no idea what happened in that scene now. Because
I've got stuff I got to comment on.
Anyway.
I've got to question all the characters and their choices. Why are characters so bad at making choices?
That sounds because like
that's how stories happen. That's why.
You guys keep fighting all the time. There's so much conflict.
I hate it.
Oh, I just don't understand the concept of TV. Or stories.
This scene with the doctor, by the way, this is where he says, oh my giddy aunt. Because the Croton shows up and he's like, oh my giddy aunt. And then he says that, like, a few times throughout the show from now on. Like, I think especially whenever they bring him back, I think it retroactively becomes one of his catchphrases. Yeah, and whenever Second Doctor comes back or reference, like, he's always saying, oh my giddy aunt, and he always has the recorder. Even though he drops the recorder pretty soon.
I don't know, man. He has the recorder, like, a little bit more than you'd expect.
Yeah, more than you'd expect. I feel like it's only a... first season, for his first season thing. And then he kind of drops it after that.
And then it's all, like, beach stuff.
He's just super into the beach. Because that's where foam is.
Meanwhile, back in the thing, Jamie flame bursts the crotons with the thing and gets away. Which it doesn't, like, do anything to the croton. And, like, the crotons don't chase him down or anything.
Like, again, they do not care about him.
They're like, eh, he'll go get poison gassed in a second anyway. Whatever, let him go. So, in effect, Jamie could have left at any time and did absolutely nothing with his time there.
He kind of finds out how they die, sort of, or I don't know. They insult him a lot, and that's it.
I think they do kind of, you realize just how, like, callous they are, because they're like, yeah, they're like, why do you kill them once you've used up all their mind power? And they're like, well, you know, it's procedure to eliminate all waste materials.
It's like, yeah, what do you do with a condom when you're done with it?
At least they recycle.
Okay, wait, there is a point to Jamie doing. Okay, so when he flame bursts the croton, it causes a disconnect from the base to the croton that's outside, because technically the croton's kind of blind and just going on, like, scanner information, because they've been inside this thing so long that their eyes aren't great, even though they're robots.
They're sort of, like, organic, though. I think the idea is that they're grown. They're, like, they're crystals. They're, like, they talk about how the ship is kind of alive, sort of, and they're sort of crystalline things. Like, I think the idea is that they're not actually robots. They're, like, crystal beings.
Nice. I'm super into that idea.
But when that happens, he loses contact with the ship, so he just, like, starts going, whoa! Whoa, guys, where am I? Whoa! And Zoe and the doctor get out. So it gives them a distraction to get away. And then they get contact back with the croton, and they're like, oh, shit, where'd they go? I don't know. Destroy that big blue box. And the TARDIS is disintegrated. Whoa, no! But it's not. And we get... Is this the first time that the HADS is mentioned?
This is, as far as I know, the only time that the HADS is mentioned, up until it gets mentioned in, like, the Crimson Horror or something.
It was the Ice Warrior episode.
Oh, yeah, it's the Ice Warrior episode, yeah. I knew it was a Mark Addis one. Because I know in that season of the New Who, they were doing a thing where, like, there was just, like, this subtle thing where, like, each episode they would mention something from a different era of Doctor Who. And then, like, so it was them mentioning the HADS. But yeah, in this episode, he mentions, like, oh, yeah, the TARDIS is fine. I turned on the HADS. And he's very smug about it.
What is the HADS again? What does it stand for?
The Hostile Action Displacement System or something like that.
And it'll not be used again until the 11th Doctor.
But apparently, because it only kind of works. Again, like, it reappears somewhere much more inconvenient this time. And then in that other one, it reappears on the other side of the planet. It's clearly not a great thing.
I mean, also, he mentions, like, I remember to turn it on this time. And then I guess he just turned it off for a long time. I was like, oh, right, I've got that thing it does. Okay. So everybody's getting their separate plans ready. Forehead's getting his fireballs ready. The leader's getting his overly worded surprise attack ready, which they're going to take out the pillars underground, the thing holding the machine up, I guess. Jamie escapes while the crotons won't shut up. And then the Doctor and Zoe return. And, like, for a while there, they don't even, like, worry about Jamie. They're like, they just completely forget that he's a person that exists.
They keep remembering and forgetting about Jamie. They're like, oh, wait, Jamie, right? We need to figure out about Jamie. And they come on, like, oh, where's Jamie? Like, oh, we did the thing. Like, oh, crap, Jamie, we got to worry about Jamie. Oh, hey. And then they get distracted by another thing. And they're like, Jamie, oh, shit, Jamie.
Right, because they return. And they're like, well, let's find Jamie. And then it's like, where is everyone? And then, like, they're like, oh, the city's been evacuated. Why? Oh, we're doing this, like, surprise attack thing? What? No, that's a terrible idea. We must go stop it.
But we have slings and fireballs.
And then he gives the scientist a chemistry book? Or, like, some chemistry stuff he wrote up. It's like, can you make this? And he's like, I don't know, maybe. We don't know about this.
I love the scientist. The scientist is, like, my favorite Gone character by far.
Scientist is the best.
He's hilarious. I love him. And then I think that's the point where they realize that Jamie's went in. So they're like, oh shit, we gotta go find him.
I think the line is actually where they're like, what about Jamie? And the doctor's like, oh shit, I forgot about Jamie and all the commotion. And then somebody's like, oh yeah, he went into the machine. And they're like, oh shit.
That's not good. They go down to the underground. The doctor's like, don't do it. Stop, stop, stop. But it's too late. The ceiling starts falling down and collapses on the doctor. He's smushing. And that's the end of episode 3. And we are now into the final episode, episode 4, which I have called Sulfur So Good.
Okay, but that means that none of these episodes are titled Rage Against the Machine. And I'm very annoyed about that.
All right, episode 3 can be Rage Against the Machine.
All right, episode 3 is retroactively Rage Against the Machine.
And this one is Sulfur So Good, because Sulfur So Good.
That's fair. I'm not going to like, no, you should keep that one.
Slings and fireballs, that one can go. So
the scientist has made like a bottle of acid.
Something called acid.
He doesn't know about it, but he's just following orders.
You just take it, and then you see things, and it's great. And then the angry guy, whose name I forget or never learned, goes to rescue the doctor, pulls the rocks off the top of him, and the doctor gets up, and he's okay. But then that guy immediately gets hit with a rock, like immediately.
And just after getting his rocks off, too.
And this is when, okay, so like the entire machine is shaking, but it doesn't really fuck with too much. But the Croton's heads are just like spinning like crazy.
It's great. It was good fun. I enjoyed it very much.
And then we cut back to Zoe is doctoring the guy up. And there's a really adorable scene where she's like trying to put like a splint on him, I guess, because his legs hurt. Even though it looked like it hit him in the head. I don't know how medicine or any of that works. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
What's it called when you do medicine for a body? Doctoring?
Are you trying to say, think of first aid?
Health? I don't know. There's a word and I can't think of it.
Not first aid.
Maybe first aid. I don't know how doing that works. I don't know.
My thing is, I know what he's talking about, but I can't remember the word either.
Like, all I can think of is anatomy, and that's not the word.
I feel like there's a word missing from my brain, too. I don't know what it is. There are gaps in my knowledge, and if we investigate that, maybe we could figure out what's going on.
Anyway, she's trying to make a splint for this guy, or whatever. I don't know words or anything. But she's like asking the doctor if she can take his suspenders.
He says no, and she grabs them.
And he's like, here, take this other thing I have in my coat instead. Like, I think it's a handkerchief or something. But it's great. I love them too.
Yeah, this is around the time where they remember about Jamie again.
That's when they learned that he went into the machine. Also, there's something leaking.
The thing that they did hurt the machine. The machine is bleeding now, which is pretty hardcore.
I didn't know what it was. I was like, where is this in relationship to anything? I don't know what's happening.
What is it?
I think it's like the top of the machine or something. I don't quite know exactly how it works. But yeah, they realize Jamie's gone. And then Zoe just piles on because Zoe's also like, man, no, they won't want Jamie. Like, Jamie's going to be useless to them.
Because I'm trying to remember, she was very particular about how she said it. She said, Jamie was untrained. And I was like, I like that. I like that you're just calling him untrained. You're not like, Jamie
is a dumbass.
It's a dumbass low brain. You're like, Jamie's untrained. He has the ability to know all the things I know. Just nobody's trained him yet. He hasn't learned any of it yet.
So Ehrlich and the leader get in a bit of a fight now over who's going to be the leader.
He's been clearly trying to have this coup for a while now.
Yeah.
Like a whole day.
It's sort of implied that his ambitions stretch back further, perhaps even to the weekend.
And they're arguing and fighting and getting nowhere, and the Croton comes out like, hey, shut up for a second. We got to move the plot forward. And then the Croton's like, I want the doctor and Zoe because they're smarter than you guys. No offense. And they're like, we won't give them to you. And then like the Croton just like destroys a guy, just a random wobbly-kneed guy. And they're like, holy shit, what'd you do that for? He's like, it's a threat. God damn. Did we teach you nothing? And he's like, just give us the high brains and we'll leave. And they're like, all right, we can do that. What if we don't? We'll disperse you. Okay, yeah, we'll do that then. We'll get you those high brains.
It's like, you want some high brains? I know a guy.
This is when Jamie finally escapes. He like Winnie the Poohs himself under the door. Cause like the door doesn't open all the way when he shoves the rock in. The doctor and Zoe have to pull him out. Cause they just go to that door and just assume he's gonna make his way out, I guess. Like without waiting to be like, are you okay? Are you fine? The doctor's like, all right, Jamie, here's your mission. You need to go to that scientist and make more acid. And he's like, I was in there.
I remember being like, no, I'm fine. Thanks for asking. I'll go do this thing, I guess. Rude.
Oh, and then the best scene ever happens. Jamie and the scientist are making the acid. And it is so fucking good. Things are exploding.
Neither one of them has a great grasp on science.
Yeah, no, he doesn't know what he's doing. Yeah, the ass like, if we put more, do you think this will happen? Like, I don't know.
James like, why are you asking me? I clearly don't know anything. I just had some people tell me that for an entire episode. And Leah's like, well, I don't know anything either, so...
I'm just gonna pour it in and see what happens. Worst we can do is blow us all up.
That's an actual line. Worst thing we can do is blow everything up.
I think that scene is the most Robert Holmesy scene in this whole thing.
It's the best scene in the serial.
It's my new life philosophy. Worst thing that can happen is I blow everybody up. Let's do it.
Elik basically captures the Doctor and Zoe and is like, we're going to put you in the machine now.
By the way, the only reason why we remember Elik is because his name is said like 20 times in a row in one scene, and that's it.
I don't even remember that. He's just forehead in my head. He looks kind of like, what's his name? He plays, Andrew Scott. He looks kind of like Andrew Scott. He plays Moriarty on...
He does.
But like a little bit thicker and less like, you know, handsome.
He also reminds me of this Viner guy I follow named Heath. Well, I guess Vine's going away. But his name's Heath Wilcox. He looks an awful lot like that guy.
Have you ever seen both of them in the same room?
No.
That means that there are macro.
That was the gap in our knowledge. My knowledge, anyway. It has now been filled. Thank you for filling my gap. So, the Doctor and Zoe were wanting to go back in the machine anyway. He, like, takes them there because he wants to...
I like the way that it goes down, though, because the Doctor, like, comes rushing in and is like, oh, we gotta figure out a way to get back into the machine. And he looks like, I can help you. And then arrests them.
But for evil reasons.
But I'm not doing it kindly.
He's also like, the Crotons were like, if you bring us the high brains, we'll leave. We'll go away.
But so, like, yeah, they get, yeah, I like that scene, because it's like, the Doctor's like, yeah, we gotta get in that machine. And then he looks like, yeah, oh, yeah, we can do that. Everyone, like, points spears at them or whatever, and then suddenly the Doctor's like, maybe we don't want to go on the machine.
The Doctor fights it. He's like, hey, knock it off. You're just gonna hand us over? That's so rude.
You're giving me what I want, but not the way I wanted it.
But also, I guess he does not have the bottle of acid currently.
He gave it to curly-haired leader, Art Garfunkel.
I was thinking William Catt, but okay. An older William Catt, though. So they put him in, and the Crotons are like, cool. Hey, Croton number two, can I kill the Gons now? Nah, it'll take too much energy. Aw, shucks. It was very Dominators. But then, yeah, the leader guy, as the door is closing, he leaps in. It's like, here's your acid. Then the Crotons disintegrate him, like, immediately. It's a little sad.
There's right afterwards, the Doctor grabs Zoe and, like, turns her away, and it makes me choked up.
We barely knew this guy.
And most of the time, he was kind of not useful.
He had a really bad, overly worded surprise attack plan. And then there's this whole thing of like, okay, did I hear this right? If the ship runs out of power, it'll explode?
I got the impression that if the ship takes off, it'll explode. If the Crotons get what they want, which is enough salad dressing to get off this planet, then leaving will destroy the planet.
Okay.
Yeah, no, but they say,
I thought there was something like, well, why don't
the Crotons? And they're like, we can't. You can't just kill us, because if you do, the ship will explode.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Like, it's a lot. It's kind of hard to follow. It doesn't end up mattering.
And then this is when they sort of explain where they came from, because why not?
Is this where they start calling it the Dinotrope? Because that's a pretty good name. I like it. They're like, we got to get the high brains. There's a lot of getting the high brains in the Dinotrope.
It was just called the Machine for a while, which is also foreboding. But the Dinotrope is really cool. And then you find out that they are a crashed battleship. They trained up the Gons to be less primitive so that they could use their brain power to power their ship so that they could get out of there. But it's been taking a fuck ton of time. Also, them crashing is what... Is that what caused the planet to go all wastelandy? Or...
No, there was a war.
Okay. Jamie and the scientists show up with a big jug of acid. And then Jamie gets pissed at Elik for putting Zoe and the Doctor into the thing.
Every time he goes away, they go in the machine.
Yeah, it's just a revolving door of one of them's in there at all times. The Doctor very bluntly hints at Zoe to pour the acid into their, like, bubbly water. And then it doesn't take effect immediately.
And so they have to stall for time.
And it's hilarious. It's great.
They're like, I'll stand here, you stand there. No, I want to stand there. Okay, I'll stand out with this. I stand here, and you stand here. And they, like, there's a lot of business with, like, putting hats on wrong, and, like,
it, like, flips off. Yeah.
These, like, band headsets, and the Doctor tries to put it on so that that it's covering, like, his forehead.
We're all doing motions for the podcast.
I was trying to be visually descriptive.
Okay. So it's like headphones that go over your ears, but he tries to put it on, like, over his forehead and the back of his head. Which, to be fair, is a lot like a couple of props they've used previously on the show that do work that way. In the Dominators and the Ice Warriors, there's a thing that goes on like that. But no, he's just being goofy. It's hilarious, though. But then, yeah, the acid finally hits, and...
I hate when that happens.
They're like, whoa, man, maybe what's happening? And they just start going, la, 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 and fall to the ground.
It melts the Dinotrope, which looks like Epcot. We haven't mentioned that yet. It looks like Epcot.
It does.
The melting of everything looks cool as hell.
Like they made Epcot out of sugar and it started pouring water on it.
I like it. I'm a big fan.
I was about to say, it actually looks like a big golf ball to me. And then I realized that's the same
thing.
And then they get out and everyone's pouring the acid on the thing. We get a small scene where Zoe's like, how did all this work? And the doctor's like, science. And she's like, well, what about this? And he's like, mostly science. Let's go.
Again, it's a weird scene because, like, but this wasn't made of fully this. It's like, oh, well, the solution wasn't fully this. It's an answer to a question that no one asked. I can't believe that, like, Doctor Who at the time had a science advisor, but it sounds like it was just like the science advisor was like, no, this doesn't work that way. It's like, what if we add an extra little sum-sum? They're like, yeah, that's fine.
But then Team TARDIS sort of Batmans out of there, and they're like, where did they go? He was going to teach me about science, says the scientist. Scientist is all
Someone
excited about
needs
science.
To teach me chemistry.
It's a lot like the end of the Macro Terror, except they don't dance out. This story is really a lot like the Macro Terror, but like a different kind of funny.
But that's it. That's the end of the Crotons. Bye.
Anyway, end of podcast. We're done talking to you.
No, Cherry, do a live one and then go into it.
Final thoughts. Oh, every time I do it, I feel like it's not going to be awful this time.
You got to do it like the radio announcer.
Yeah, yeah.
Final thoughts. Yeah. Coming at you. Pew, pew, pew. Yep. Brought to you by the Denny's on the I-5. The Denny's on the I-5, it's a little bit better than all the other Denny's. Final thoughts. Again, I've actually seen this one a lot, even though it's not very good. It's not bad. Like, it's just, it's kind of a mess on a plot level. And like, yeah, you're thrown into it really. Like, basically everything about the Gons, like any Gond who isn't the scientist, and everything about like the civilization and the Dominators is kind of boring. Like, I actually don't.
Did you say Dominators?
Did I say the Dominators? Exactly. The Crotons. Anything about the Crotons themselves are kind of boring. Like, I like the design. I like the heads. I like the kind of spinny ring pop heads.
I like the accordion arms, too.
But, like, the weird kind of grill mark chest and everything, they're kind of boxy in a not great way. And again, they have no personality. So, like, everything about the Gons and the Crotons, I don't super care for. But everything with Team TARDIS is delightful. The scene with Jamie and the scientist is great. And like, yeah, I love that the scene with the learning machine and the Doctor and Zoe. The Doctor and Zoe are like in top form in this one. It's a very good serial for them. And like, yeah, and it's like there's little bits of things that will eventually become the stuff that Robert Holmes does. But yeah, like, it's okay.
I feel like what Chris was saying about kind of the design of the Crotons kind of sums up like my feelings on the episode. It's made up of all these neat, interesting parts. And then the whole thing doesn't make one cohesive whole at all. It's like you have the cool heads that spin, and you have the cool tiny hands and the accordion arms, but when you look at it all together, you're like, that's kind of clunky and a little generic. And that's the Crotons.
And the bass is a little wobbly.
Yeah! It works all around.
The one thing I will say is, like, yeah, it seems to move fast, which I haven't felt like that in a while. But it almost seems to move too fast and, like, to the point where, like, I don't know what's happening. Just stuff is happening and I did not follow any of it. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff. Team TARDIS is great. There's a giant penis monster.
Always a good time.
Always, yeah.
Always in for a happy ending.
So that's in the middle. It was a happy middle.
I get the Doctor. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. The Team TARDIS is a lot of fun. And the Doctor is so smug. He seems like they've taken up, like, a thing and smug on this one. Which I love.
I mean, even though this episode was kind of mediocre. I mean, that's basically it. It was mediocre. It was okay, but not, it wasn't terrible. But it's at least better than the story it replaced, which I read about. There was this story idea in place where they were going to land on a female-dominated planet.
Oh, God.
Zoe was going to lead this, like, sexual revolution. Jamie was going to be in drag for a lot of it. And to deprogram Zoe, the doctor was going to give her a spanking. I wish you guys could see Cherry's face right now. He looks so offended and shocked.
That's horrifying. I mean, it's not, I believe it. It's not like this show hasn't focused on Zoe's ass before.
I think it did get turned into a Big Finish story, so.
Oh, no.
Oh.
I don't know, that story, I'm glad that doesn't, that didn't happen.
We're glad that doesn't exist. Good call, whoever nixed it.
This may be a middling episode, but it's way better than that. So I guess that's it.
That's it. We did another episode.
Woo!
Yay! I'm shocked every time.
It's never certain.
Never is.
I have a thing I have to pluck. So by the time this is out, my web series Relativity is out.
Woo!
Go watch that thing right now. It'll be the best thing that you do. It's a good life choice.
There's a link to it. Like, go watch it. It's finally out. It's a thing I've been working on off and on for like a year. I've mentioned it here before, but go watch it. Enjoy it. We worked really hard on it. I'm very proud of it. The thing, should I explain what it is?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Go. I've watched it 3 times, by the way.
It's a short, kind of like a web miniseries. It's a time travel story that follows 3 characters and it's 10 episodes, but you can watch these 10 episodes in 3 different orders. Following each character as they sort of navigate this time travel mess thing. It shouldn't work, but it does. Really proud of it. Again, these guys have seen it, and they can tell you that it's good, and they'll be slightly more objective than I will when I say it. But yeah, please watch it. I want everyone to watch it. That's it. That's my main thing to plug.
If you enjoy this podcast, then I'm going to go ahead and assume that you also enjoy Doctor Who and time travel shenanigans. This shit will fucking blow your mind. Like, just go fucking watch it right now, please. Because, like, your life will be better for it.
That's very well written. Because you can watch it, you watch it in 3 different orders. The same thing, but it feels different every order you watch it in. And it's just brilliant. It's brilliant. I read the scripts before I saw them because we're friends. And I was like, I read through the first order and I was like, that was really good. It's probably going to be kind of boring when I read through the other orders because I've already read it. And every time I was like, oh, wow, that works. Every order is like there's something interesting to follow on. And then took a while for the episodes to be made. And then he showed us a rough cut of them. And we watched the first one. And I was like, that was really good. I don't know if it'll be as good when we watch the other orders. And again, I was blown away like, oh, this is still really entertaining and fun to watch, even though I literally just watched it. It is so intriguing to watch it from a different person's perspective, and you get new things out of it. It's really, really good.
I mean, I don't want to brag, but it's better than Rashomon.
It's better than the Muppets.
No, it's not better than the Muppets. We've established that the Muppets are the greatest thing that happened in Western civilization. This is like 2 or 3 rungs below that.
Yeah, this is up there with the Muppets.
It's like one of the not as good Muppets. Yeah, so that's out now. Watch it, because you can watch it. And now I can stop plugging it as a thing that might be happening at some point in the future.
It is now a thing that has happened in the past.
It's now in the past. And now instead, I'll plug a comic that I wrote that made Joe and Tony cry.
We both wrote comics.
We both wrote comics for our friend Ray Friesen, who has been on this podcast.
Tentatively going to be part of a webcomic anthology called The Foggiest. So keep an eye out for that.
I don't know much about that because it just existed all of a sudden one day.
Ray just started throwing comic ideas at us and we went, okay.
Joe said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and write 2 really good scripts and then a 3rd one.
You haven't even read that 3rd one.
So she can't make claims about its quality.
Yes. Exactly. Anything else you want to talk about?
This is the first time that I definitely don't need to plug Brains, but go ahead and watch Brains. It's like done. But go ahead and watch it. It's still good. It still exists.
Oh, and there's new stuff now too. There's like spinoffs and shit.
Yeah, Apocalypse Yesterday. That's out already. It's just 1 episode. That's it. There's another one that's going to be happening at some point in the future. I don't know when exactly. I'm not the best person to talk about that. But yeah, that's going to be happening later. Yeah, Brains Season 2 still exists. But importantly, just go watch Relativity right now.
Yes.
You don't need to be listening to this anymore.
All right, bye.
Really good. Nothing more of substance to say.
If you like this episode, check out more on WatchYourWrestleOn.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. Do it. Leave a review.
Please. Please. I'm asking super, super nicely. Pretty, pretty please. Please do it. Thank you. I love you.
And if you'd like to help us out even more, go to WatchYourWrestleOn.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which is Patreon.com/Watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like day early episodes, videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records where you'll get to hear us talk about the Muppets for way too long.
You mean that's not in this?
Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page.
Like Joe's about to do right now.
Yeah, special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode. You are amazing, sir.
Thanks, Matt.
And you can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's Tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. Can you say that in your announcer, your radio announcer voice?
That's Tumbles without an E because of Tumblr.
Tune in next time when we talk about the Seeds of Death with Jez.
Spoiler alert, more foam.
Woo! Yes!
Bye.
Bye, we're done now.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
I love you.
I usually don't talk during this.
There is a way we could fight them, and that is by not letting them suspect that they're being attacked.